Hello, I'm John Dennis. It's Thursday the 23rd of April. Today, a new 50p tax rate for the richest people in Britain in Alistair Darling's budget aimed at fighting recession.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, today's budget will take Britain through the most serious global economic turmoil for over 60 years.
You'll hear what The Guardian's experts think and get the view from Rotherham Job Centre.
First time I've ever been made redundant, and I don't seem to have had any help, you know, what to do, where to go or anything like that.
Also today, the Children's Secretary Ed Balls is accused of misleading Parliament over the SATS fiasco. But before we continue, let's have the news and the papers with Bill Overton.
The UN Security Council's called on the Tamil Tigers to lay down their arms and join talks with the government. The Tamil forces are trapped within an enclave on the north coast of Sri Lanka, surrounded by steadily advancing government forces. The Red Cross said that hundreds of civilians also trapped have been killed or injured. The Security Council accused the Tamil fighters of using them as human shields. The council said that it was now time for the Tigers to abandon terrorism. The US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's accused the Pakistan government of giving in to the Taliban by letting them control parts of the country. The government's made a pact giving the Swat Valley the right to practice Islamic law. Mrs. Clinton told a congressional hearing that this was in effect abdicating control and that Pakistan posed a mortal threat to the security and safety of the world. Swat is only 60 miles from the Pakistani capital. Here in Britain, the independent reviewer of terror legislation, Lord Carlisle, says he'll examine the case of 12 men arrested in an anti-terrorist operation 2 weeks ago. All the men were released without charge, though the Home Office is pressing for 11 of them, all Pakistanis, to be deported on grounds of national security. Lord Carlisle confirms the case is part of his annual review, but he'll accelerate it because of the national interest. Gordon Brown's plan to have a vote on his proposals to change the system of MPs' expenses has failed to convince the opposition. At a meeting after the budget yesterday evening, the leaders of the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats said the idea of introducing a day rate rather than expenses for second homes wouldn't work. David Cameron described it a sign-on and bugger-off system. Now the Committee on Standards in Public Life will launch its own inquiry and will produce fresh proposals. Football and Manchester United look to have clinched the Premier League title with a 2-1 win over Portsmouth. They're 3 points ahead of Liverpool with a game in hand. The budget, of course, takes over all the morning papers, and it's not that pretty reading for the Chancellor. Alistair in Wonderland headlines the Mail because he pins his hopes on the fantasy of a swift return to growth. The Telegraph also calls it a fantasy, while the Financial Times says that it's a gamble, pointing out the government borrowing means a decade of debt, and quoted David Cameron, who said the economy was in an utter mess. The Times says that the budget was read all over. The Guardian calls the debt Labour's leaving present. This package delivers a poison pill to the next government, whoever forms it. The Sun simply puts this headline on its front page: at least it's sunny. The Telegraph and The Independent go for the introduction of a 50p tax rate for top earners. That's rich, says the Indy, claiming that PM tears up new Labour script. The Telegraph calls it the return of the class war, with a mock-up Russian poster of Brown as a Lenin figure saying tax the rich in front of closed factories. Their analysis says the taxman's taken all our dough and our children's too. The paper also warns the pound is being hit on the foreign exchange markets and that borrowing may become much more expensive as Britain loses its economic reputation. The Express has given up completely on the budget without saying what else could be done. The paper's front page simply reads, "They've ruined Britain." There's more news and sport throughout the day on guardian.co.uk.
In his budget speech, the Chancellor painted a grim picture of the UK economy, revising his forecasts ever downward. Alistair Darling predicted deepening deflation, minus 3% by September. Against the backdrop of worsening economic news, the Chancellor announced plans to tax the rich and help the unemployed.
Today's budget will continue to help people through this global recession and prepare Britain for the opportunities of the future. Firstly, there will be help now to get people back into work quickly and to support businesses and homeowners facing problems. And secondly, there will be measures to support investment in growth and green industries of the future whilst the recovery takes hold and ensure that our public finances are sustainable. We will protect investment in schools and hospitals and other key public services, and we'll work to rebuild our financial services. And taken together, this budget will build on the strengths of the British economy and its people, speed the recovery, providing jobs and spreading prosperity. And in all of these decisions, we've been guided by our core values of fairness and opportunity and our determination to invest and grow our way out of recession. Yeah. Mr. Deputy Speaker, today's budget will take Britain through the most serious global economic turmoil for over 60 years.
Larry Elliott is our economics editor.
The economy this year, he forecasts, will shrink by 3.5%. That's the worst single year we've seen since 1945. Some people think it will be even worse than that. The IMF thinks it could contract by about 4% this year, but minus 3.5% beats any other year we've seen in any recession since the Second World War.
How far will this budget go to protect Britain, deliver us from the worst ravages of recession?
Well, I don't think it's going to do that much. I mean, the amount of stimulus in this budget is very modest. It's about £5 billion he's injected into the economy. If you consider that Britain is something like a £1.5 trillion economy, you're talking about a third of 1% of GDP. So the amount of money he's injected is quite tiny in comparison to the overall size of the economy. And there's a limit to what he can do. I mean, this is a very, very severe state of affairs. It's probably the worst economic downturn globally that we've seen in 60 or 70 years. Darling was widely reviled for saying that last August in a now famous Guardian interview, but he's been proved absolutely right. This is something that none of us have seen for a very, very long time. And as a result, there is a limit to what he can do. He can try and knock some of the sort of edges off it, but actually we are facing a very grim 12 months, 18 months, 2 years before things hopefully start to get better. So he's done a little bit to ameliorate the recession. He's tried to help the young unemployed. He's poured some money into things like construction to try and get stalled projects going again. But it's quite small beer, and he's battling against an enormously strong headwind.
Were there any surprises in this budget?
Two things were surprising. One was the sort of soak the rich part of it. I mean, there's no doubt that Darling has tried to put some political water between himself and the opposition by saying, look, we are going to make the rich people, who the public, I think, probably blame for the downturn, the bankers and the city financiers, we are going to make these people pay for it. So the top rate of tax, which had previously been going up to 45% in 2011, is now going to go up to 50% from next April, and assuming the election is in May, that will break Labour's manifesto commitment not to raise the top rate of tax in this Parliament. And there have been other changes to people on higher incomes, which will mean they'll pay more tax. So they're having their pension contributions more severely taxed, and they're having their personal tax allowances withdrawn. So that was one big surprise. I think the other surprise was there was a bit more greenery around in this one than there was in the PBR. Darling got quite severely caned by the environmental lobby for not doing more to green the economy in November. And while, again, we're not exactly talking a vast sum of money, he's talking about £1 billion of the stimulus is going on green measures. I think there was a bit more of an effort to actually focus the economy on an environmental sustainability going forward. So there's money for offshore wind farms and for the new generation of power stations. So I think that was slightly more than people were expecting. I think the expectations of that were pretty low.
Alistair Darling didn't have much money to play with in this budget. Where did he make his efficiency savings?
Well, he says that he can actually cut the running costs of what they've had these efficiency reviews going on across Whitehall for many years. And he says that actually they've identified new ways of saving money on IT projects, on backroom staff, and on just the general sort of running costs of Whitehall and government generally. And those savings he's going to plough back into frontline savings. And looking at his figures for public spending going forward, he needs every penny he can find, because he's talking about current spending. That's the sort of running costs of government, salaries for teachers and doctors and drugs and so on. That's going to go up by 0.7% a year in the years to come. And that is as tight, if not a little bit tighter, than the public spending increases in the entire period when Mrs. Thatcher was Prime Minister in the 1980s, when she got heavily criticised for starving the public sector of cash. So going forward, the public sector is going to face a quite severe squeeze, and the money that he's finding from these efficiency savings across Whitehall will be needed to top up what is going to be a very limited amount of cash for the public sector.
Larry Elliott. Well, in his response to the budget, the Conservative leader David Cameron heaped scorn on Labour's handling of the economy.
Today, everyone can see what an utter mess this Labour government and this Labour Prime Minister have made of the British economy. The fastest rise in unemployment in our history, the worst recession since World War II, and the worst peacetime public finances ever known. As of today, any claim they have ever made to economic competence is dead.
David Cameron responding to Alistair Darling's budget. Well, our political commentator, Martin Kettle, says the election starts here.
It certainly is a budget with an election in view. There will be one more budget before the 2010 general election, but this is the one where I think the agenda is being set. And Alistair Darling was basically trying to tell people, if not that the worst is over, but that the worst will be over within a foreseeable time, and that the next general election will take place at an upswing in the economy, that there will be growth. He talked about a growth rate of 3.5%, which is a pretty daring figure to put in. I think the single most surprising thing in this budget. But clearly, the next general election will be a contest between Labour saying that the worst is over and Labour's got you through it and has maintained its core values and its core programmes and its core strategies, and the Tories saying it's all collapsed, everything's gone wrong, and the next generation is being saddled with billions and billions of debt, which are going to define everything, and Labour has got us into this mess.
I mean, David Cameron made a lot in his budget rebuttal of Labour's broken election promises and the fiscal rules that have been cast aside. But actually, it's the Tories as well who have had to completely rethink what they would like to do in the next 5 years after they, assuming they reach power.
David Cameron's right that Labour has abandoned many of the what had appeared to be the basic principles on which it ran the economy up until the credit crunch, the financial crisis of the last 2 years. And nothing more dramatically illustrates that than the increase in the top rate of taxation and the bringing of it forward, which Alistair Darling announced in the budget. But of course, that poses questions for the Tories as well. They do have to decide pretty quickly where they stand on an increase in the high rate of tax within the next 12 months. And the fact is that politics over the next decade is absolutely going to be dominated by the deficit, by the debt, and by the need to pay back the borrowing which the government has had to take out in order to save the banks. We're going into a completely different political landscape over several years now from what we've got used to over the last decade or so. Things are going to be very hard. Governments of whatever stripe are going to be making tough decisions about whether to keep programs, to contain spending, to cut wages, to cut numbers. It's all going to be hard, whoever is in power.
Do you think that Alistair Darling made any of those tough decisions in this budget?
I think on the whole, Labour postponed the toughest things until the future. I think, you know, there is a calculation clearly here that, you know, it wants to go through to the election saying we are, you know, we are still investing in schools, we're still investing in the health service, we're still giving money to pensioners. There were a number of targeted anti-poverty measures in there. They've clearly identified the school leavers who are coming onto the job market this year in a very, very difficult time, unemployment rising very rapidly. They've identified those kind of targets for extra spending, but the problem is, how is it going to be paid for? The debt is very large over several years. It's going to be up to 80% of GDP almost in 4 or 5 years time, and that is the, you know.
Martin Kettle. Well, hours before the budget speech, new unemployment figures were released, revealing a record rise in the number of people seeking work. Unemployment now stands at 2.1 million. That's the worst since Labour came to power in 1997. Yesterday, the Chancellor announced a range of measures to help unemployed people find work. There'd be guaranteed training for the jobless and an extra £1.7 billion for job centres. The Guardian's Martin Wainwright gauged reaction from some of those at the sharp end of the recession in South Yorkshire.
I've come to Rotherham in South Yorkshire, which has taken a few hits lately. The Burberry factory making fashion clothes has lost 600 odd jobs, and Chorus, the Indian-owned steel company, which has a huge plant here, is making probably 700 people redundant. The job centre here in the centre of Rotherham, just behind the town hall, has been busy all morning. It's a lovely morning, I have to say. If you have to go looking for a job, it is certainly a very nice sunny day and warm here. But people are not happy, and they're not short of suggestions for Alistair Darling or reactions to what he's proposing.
Haven't done anything for us before, has he? Well, I just think more people are being made redundant and nobody ever seems to be bothered about them. First time I've ever been made redundant, and I don't seem to have had any help, you know, what to do, where to go or anything like that. So
it's interesting that just, I say just, I mean it's a big thing, but he could help in that way by making the system easier.
I mean, there's more red tape. I was on the phone Friday to get here, to make an appointment to come here, and I was on an hour and a quarter.
On a paid-for line?
Yeah, and asking stupid questions. It's ridiculous.
They do alt training and everything anyway, and it don't help nobody, does it?
Have you had some training?
I have done it in the past, yeah, previously, yeah, and it didn't help me, so...
What sort of stuff did they give you to do?
Well, go on computer courses and everything, which I already know how to do anyway. Mm. And they make you do job search and everything, but there's no jobs about, so it's pointless.
We'll get everybody back to work in our buildings, and that would, like, get up money going for other people, you know, like shops with the bite sandwiches, etc., etc., and then everybody would have some money. And instead of putting it into banks, well, they're chucking money at banks as if, like, why don't they chuck money at the people, you know?
And put it into, like, public works?
Yeah,
I mean, like building and improving like roads? And
I mean, there's a place at Barnsley College, for instance. They've knocked Avon it down, and they've left it. And they're going to leave it by 2011 for some peculiar... And, like, there's no new college going up now, and I don't know what crack is. All these kids that are going to college, like, because they've knocked their old and down, so they'll probably have to be shipped out to Sheffield, Doncaster, Rotherham, etc.
Because they've frozen the project because of the credit crunch.
Yeah, I said they've frozen quite a few projects.
Worrying all foreign people coming to country.
You think there's too many people?
They're not working, they're getting free benefits. Why should they get benefits and not have to work like us?
And are you out of work at the moment?
Yeah.
What did you do before?
I used to work at Premier Poultry.
Premier Poultry, is that like, you know, preparing school, and to think, yeah. And your friend here, you're on sick, is it?
Yeah.
Is that long term or?
Yeah, at the minute.
Yeah. With the poultry industry, that's one where there's been a lot of people from EC countries coming in, is that right?
Yeah. They're just employing foreign people because they work for peanuts. Under hard workers, so they don't want to employ us.
Martin Wainwright reporting. And there's full coverage of the budget today, including a special budget podcast from our politics and economics team at guardian.co.uk/budget. Also on The Guardian's website today, Oracle buys Sun. But why would a database company take over a hardware and software firm? Find out at guardian.co.uk/technology. Afghanistan gets its first national park. Find out about that at guardian.co.uk/Afghanistan. And with St George's Day approaching, we look at the battle for the soul of English folk music at guardian.co.uk/music. Last year, there was a crisis in school SATs exams. The marking process of 1.2 million papers collapsed. Thousands of tests were lost. Thousands more were severely delayed. Ken Boston resigned as the chief executive of the Qualifications and Curriculum Authority last year after being blamed by the government for the fiasco. But yesterday, he broke his silence, giving evidence to MPs on the Commons Education Committee, as our education editor, Polly Curtis, reports.
He's made some really very serious allegations against both Ed Balls and Jim Knight, the schools minister, about the evidence they gave to the inquiry into what went wrong with the SATs last year. And he says they misled that inquiry. He even says that in one statement that Ed Balls made to Parliament, he misled Parliament as well. So, I mean, it's very strong stuff.
And in what way did, I mean, what did Ed Balls say that Ken Boston takes issue
Ed
with?
Ed Balls claimed in evidence to this inquiry, which was then recorded in this inquiry, that he and his officials repeatedly pressed Ken Boston and the Qualifications and Curriculum Authority on progress with the SATs. Ken Boston says that's just not true. Jim Knight claimed that there was a meeting that Ken Boston was at, which Ken Boston claims he never was at, and actually alleges that he made this meeting up. And Jim Knight's admitted that mistake and said it was just a mistake, nothing to read into it. But these kind of two key things were used to, Ken Boston says, portray him as complacent and beleaguered and like he wasn't coping with the situation. And Ken Boston puts his hands up. He says, I was responsible for an organisation that saw the collapse of the marking of 1.2 million papers. It is ultimately like my responsibility, and he resigned for it. But what he's upset about was the portrait of him that was painted, he says, by ministers.
And he says that Lord Sutherland's inquiry was actually prevented by Ed Balls from investigating the government's role in the crisis.
The remit Lord Sutherland was given was to look at the role of the QCA and ETS, which is the private company, which is really at fault here. That was the company that said it could deliver the tests and completely failed. But it wasn't asked to look at the role of the DCSF. And he says that by setting the remit like that, you could never get to the heart of the problems. And he says that, in fact, for years he's been warning that this would happen. He said he nearly resigned in 2006 because ministers refused to take his advice to move SATs to an online marking system. Now, he says that had they done that, that would have prevented any kind of problems like this occurring. But ministers wouldn't do it because they were worried about what it would do to the results, because marking and setting the tests differently would mean you couldn't compare them with previous years. And that's all tied up in the ministers' targets and how they present Labour's record on education.
Polly Curtis. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Get out of my dreams, get into my car. Listeners of a certain age will know exactly who I'm talking about. It's the singer Billy Ocean, born in Trinidad and raised in East London, and who enjoyed massive pop success in the 1980s and now back with a new album. He spoke to The Guardian's Hannah Poole.
Presumably people are asking you or expecting you to sing some of the old favourites. Do you get tired of that?
No, not at all. Not at all. I'll sing them until I drop. Because it doesn't make any sense. You see, this is where ego can come in. You're singing songs that doesn't relate to anybody or doesn't relate to anything. But your own personal ego, because it's new. I had one new song in the show this time. The show was actually about 2 hours, but it didn't feel like it. We were having such a lot of fun. I'm singing Love Really Hurts Without You, Red Light, LOD, all the things from 76 right on to about 94. In fact, right on to 2007, basically. You know, so it's a long span of material. In fact, the problem wasn't so much what to put in, but was what to leave out.
You came here in the late 50s.
Yeah,
late 50s, early
60s.
Right.
I was 10 years old.
So you're 10 years old.
My parents came in the 50s, I came in the 60s. Trinidad is where we came from. Came to England to give us a better life, because had we stayed in Trinidad, I probably wouldn't be sitting here now. I'd probably be like a yard boy, you know, keeping the white people's outside clean, gardener. Mm. Back home we called a yard boy, but really like a gardener. Over here we called a gardener. My sisters would probably have been got pregnant with plenty of kids, with no, you know, normal sort of thing. My father didn't want that for us. I always hear this little voice in the back pushing me forward, you know, keep going, boy, keep going, for my mother and father.
You described yourself before as an East End boy, done good.
Yeah, because I grew up in the East End. Brick Lane, I don't know if you know where Brick Lane is.
I lived just off Brick Lane. So have you been to Brick Lane recently?
Yeah, I was there Monday night.
It must be very different.
When we first went there, Brick Lane was a derelict place. Until the Asians came and developed Brick Lane. Now Brick Lane is like, wow, I must give them credit for that. They've done an amazing... that's what I like to see within our culture. Unfortunately, we never seem to get the opportunity and the breaks. You know, you can look at now. We got something to look up to, a president of the United States. But look when he got the presidency. when the world is in turmoil. There's no money nowhere, there's no this nowhere, there's no that nowhere. And I think to myself, God, you know, one day it will work out for us.
How has this country changed since you arrived?
This country? The weather has changed, for one, more than anything else. I think that the people are more accommodating. I think they've realised the changes that outside influences have brought to the culture. I think, as a whole, the majority of people that live in this country accept the culture. The majority of English people are very tolerant. You know, we mustn't be fooled by the one or two people shouting racial thing. Going out this time round has taught me a lot of things. I've seen a lot of places where I've never seen before. The people are very, very tolerant. Sometimes what governments and people and things are saying isn't necessarily what the people are saying in any country, not just this country, any country. It's a beautiful country, really. I mean, what have I got to say? What could I say about England, really and truly? Yeah, when I was younger, I would get annoyed about certain things, but, you know, when you're on reflection, you look back. It's been very good for us, a lot of us. Had we stayed in Trinidad, there'd never be Billy Ocean. Simple as that. There would never have been a Billy Ocean.
Billy Ocean talking to Hannah Poole. Roxanne Escobales, Adam Gabbett and Tim Mabey produced today's edition of Guardian Daily. I'm John Dennis. Thank you for listening.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.